الرحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار عزك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار عزك لتصي دينتك once again.
Ministry.
Soleimani was a name that the enemy had always used in a matter of caution and anticipation. Caution in dealing with the commander in the battlefield and anticipation which he brought upon his enemies from planning maneuvers that no one expected. Martyr Qasem Soleimani's victories shook the foundation of the White House in Washington and shocked the Zionist Israeli entity inside the occupied Palestinian territories. In short, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was a brigade of terror for the enemies of the Axis of Resistance. Commemorating the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Haj Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, we cannot but remember and admire their steadfastness in the war against terrorism in the region of West Asia. Commander Soleimani was brutally assassinated in an illegal extrajudicial war crime by Donald Trump on behalf of American imperialism, on behalf of NATO, on behalf of Israel, and on behalf of Saudi Arabia and the Persian Gulf states in pursuance of the greater Israel and Western hegemony over the entire region of West Asia. His crime in the eyes of the aggressor was to stand up for justice, to stand up for peace, and to stand against sanctions, regime change wars, occupation, illegal invasions, and imperialist colonial aggression. From Gaza to Beirut, Damascus, Baghdad, and Sana'a, Haj Qasem sought to defend the people from Western aggression. By defending Palestine, the martyr Soleimani was defending freedom, justice, and peace. By defending Syria, he was helping to save lives. By creating a rapprochement with Iraq, who the West used as a proxy war against Iran in order to weaken both countries to benefit Israel, Haj Qasem was able to heal old wounds and unify those who want peace against those who seek war. His martyrdom saddened the heart of every soul in this world. Yet, as a result of Haj Qasem's martyrdom, the regional allied forces of the resistance have strengthened steadily this year, mainly due to the steadfastness of its members and its leadership, but also because of the errors of the enemy in assassinating a hero warrior like Lieutenant General Martyr Qasem Soleimani. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. It has been 1 year since martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani's assassination. Martyr Soleimani, who lived his life in the path of resistance and fight against terrorist groups in West Asia, sought to bring peace and security to the region, which is why he was targeted by the Western terror machine to begin with. Martyr Soleimani gave his life to bring unity to the resistance factions all across the region, from Palestine to Lebanon, Syria to Iraq, and all the way to Yemen. His life and martyrdom became a legacy to the entire axis of resistance. To discuss this issue, with us from Beirut is Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, Lebanese Member of Parliament with the loyalty to the resistance bloc, Hezbollah. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Moussaoui. Now,
a pleasure, thank you.
The role of General Qasem Soleimani's military planning as well as his organized strategy and his cleverness in defeating Daesh and maybe declaring victory during his life against these terrorist groups is absolutely undeniable. But how has his martyrdom affected the continuous work of the resistance across the region of West Asia?
Well, first of all, thank you for giving the opportunity to be present at your program. This is one thing. And the other thing, I want to extend My congratulations and condolences at the same time, just like what the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, said yesterday. We live in a nation, we live in an ummah where the things are mixed together. We pay condolences to his family, and we are very grateful for all the significant achievements that have been set by his sacrifice, by his attachment, this mold and fusion into the path of the resistance, that they cannot be dissociated whatsoever. Just like what you mentioned in your introduction, you're talking about General Soleimani, you're talking about a significant person, someone who has no peer whatsoever. He has given the resistance movement, the people who are downtrodden and oppressed, and more importantly, humanity. And here, when we talk about humanity, we do no exaggeration. Why? Because ever since this creation has come into existence with the God, the Creator, the Omnipotent, the Omnipresent, we had two paths, the path of right, the path of wrong. We have just and we have oppression. We have always we have bad and we have good things, bad and good. He has sided, he has lined with the path of good and the truth and peace. In order to bring peace to the people, you have to fight the tyrants. This was the mission of the prophets, this was the mission of the imams, this was the mission of all of the good people all across the world. While he was alive, he has given lessons to all of those who work in the path of the resistance. And when he got martyrdom, the thing that he craved, he was always praying for his God to embrace martyrdom, and he got it in this very significant and distinguished way. He has given a lesson to be remembered by generations, and I believe it's our mission. He has done his mission properly, but it is our task, it's our duty, it's our job that we continue to do our best to survive with his martyrdom. What do I mean by this? It is not that Qasim Soleimani wants us to make him survive, to make a revivalism for his sacrifice, for his martyrdom. It is his blood which was so huge, it is his sacrifice which was so immense, that dictates upon us and put us on a responsibility to continue this path. He has set a ceiling, a level of sacrifice and martyrdom, and more importantly, victory. You did say something about his victory against the Daeshist, against Daesh, and against the American plots in the region. But what's so important also is that he has been able, through his persistence and unshakable conviction of the resistance, to do the almost impossible. You know, this is what's being done now with the resistance in Lebanon. Sayyid Nasrallah yesterday has just pinpointed that if you are talking about the kind of rockets, the pinpoint rockets, the very delicate, the very precise rockets, that you're doing your best to prevent the Lebanese resistance, the Islamic resistance, from having it, I tell you that we have accumulated, like we have 2 times more than what we used to have a year ago.
This is what I want to discuss with you now, as a member of parliament.
So if you allow me just to continue the idea, the thing is that this determination, this resolve that has been put forth by Martyr Qasim Soleimani, mm-hmm. is a heritage, is a legacy, is something that we have to hold tight to our hearts and to our minds and to our brains and to our determination and resolve for the generations to come, that the impossible can be done when we have people, when we have leaders like Qasim Soleimani. And this is something that will be handed from generation to generation till we embrace the last victory, inshallah.
This is what I want to talk about, the legacy, especially as you being part, as I mentioned, a member of parliament representing Hezbollah, the Lebanese resistance, the Lebanese Islamic resistance. How do you think the legacy of the likes of a warrior like Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani has affected the performance of your local Lebanese resistance?
You're totally right, actually. When you see someone who has this self-denial, he is altruist, he sacrifices himself, he works day and night, he never recognizes anything of the halal pleasures of life. He is away from his family, he's away from everything, only to help any oppressed. You know, we know very well, and we all remember the Mount of Sinjar, where Yazidis actually they were downtrodden and they were mutilated, they were killed, they were cleansed by Daesh. Who helped them? The Kurds as well in Iraq. All those who shouted for help, the Sulaimani ears were there, the Iranian ears, the Iranian ears of the Islamic Republic of Iran, of this revolution, of the oppressed, was there to help people everywhere in the world. We all remember here in Lebanon, we remember Bosnia and Herzegovina when the Iranians helped there. We remember Palestine, we remember everywhere. That's why the kind of legacy and heritage, even if we are working now in the parliament, some may be working like yourself or others in the media front, in the social media, all kinds of media. Some people would work now as they work in the medical field with this now coronavirus, and at certain times all those who are wounded or mutilated by the Israeli aggressions, raids, whatever. We should excel because Qasem Soleimani has set an exemplary model, a model of sacrifice for everyone who would work in every kind of field in order to excel. And I would suggest, really, we have to have this kind of Soleimani icon, like a medal for everyone who excels in his field. We should, not the Islamic Republic of Iran. We are those who benefited from his blood, from his sacrifices, more than anyone else. He embodies and dramatizes and he gives an example about the Islamic Revolution, the Islamic Republic. But we, the people of all of this axis of the resistance, people of the humanity, people of goodness, should pay homage, should pay tribute to his sacrifices and make a kind of Soleimani badge, Soleimani symbol, Soleimani icon, Soleimani honor at every level of and field of service to humanity. And this is something that should be set as an exemplary model, and everyone should sacrifice and should persist and should work with honor in order to reach this stage.
Well, the allied forces of the resistance across the region of West Asia, from Palestine to Lebanon to Syria to Baghdad, even to Sana'a, they all vowed revenge for the assassinations of both Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Deputy Director of the PMU, Hash Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Can you maybe explain to the Western public who follows on through with these news, why did these diverse resistance factions find that it's their responsibility to retaliate against those responsible who planned and targeted, in the end, a top Iranian general?
Simply because those who the murderers, the assassins who assassinated Soleimani, they are in the evil front. They represent the front of evil. They represent the front of oppression. They represent the front of finishing the human life. That's why all those who are in the other front, they are in the path of right, in the path of piety, of goodness. They want, it's not a matter of revenge for someone who has been assassinated. Now Qasem Soleimani is in the bounties of Allah. He is in heaven, inshallah, with all the prophets, with all of the other martyrs, with Imam Khomeini, with Sayyid Abbas al-Musa, with all those who were before him. But we in this place and the world that will continue this mission, we should, when you talk about revenge, we're talking about embodying the very message that he wanted to send to this world. Well, when we are in this world, we have always to stick to our rights, to help the oppressed, to fight the oppression, to fight the occupation, and this is our mission here. That's why when you hear them all over the fronts, from Palestine to Lebanon to Iraq to Syria to Yemen, even everywhere in the world, when you listen to them saying they want to avenge, they want the justice to take place. Justice leads to peace, justice leads to mercy, and this is the mission. It's not a matter of revenge, it's a matter of continuing the path of supporting the oppressed, of helping the rightful people and fighting the oppression and the evil.
Well, Member of Parliament, Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, thank you very much for joining us. You represent the loyalty to the resistance bloc, Hezbollah. Thank you for your contribution to our special show in commemoration of the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Please stay tuned. We will continue with this topic more.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marbo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
U.S. bases, warships, and troops are all still potential targets for retaliation after the assassination of Qasem Soleimani. This is a threat issued not only by the Islamic Republic of Iran, but also by the resistance factions in West Asia that were operating under the command of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. This constant wave of threats against any U.S. presence aims to drive all U.S. personnel from West Asia. Qasem Soleimani's legacy in this following report.
There's no doubt that the assassination of the two leaders, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Deputy Director of the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was a great and painful loss for everyone who knows the pivotal role that the two men distinguished in building resistance forces and confronting the American Western Zionist project to control the region and subject its people to a policy of hegemony, extortion, and brutal authoritarianism. History will preserve martyr Soleimani's role, which he mirrored both on the battlefield and in many political arenas. His presence in West Asia emerged on the regional map in the form of direct engagement by establishing combat formations, building Al-Quds Force, and the resistance factions that in the last decade have fought the largest battles to thwart American hegemony. The United States intended to establish dozens of Takfiri terrorist groups by importing mercenaries from all across the world in order to destroy the infrastructure of the countries of the region and their societies. However, the mentality of a great leader like Haj Qasem Soleimani laid the methodological and practical foundations for building a system of resistance and opening up all prospects for development and growth before it. His effort kept pace with the process of harvesting achievements and the accumulation of actual victories that protected the region from the ravages of submission and dependence on the colonial will. And if individuals in the making of history have a prominent and influential mark that rises to the basic and decisive level in determining the course of major events and developments, then martyr Qasem Soleimani's value and position melted down in building the ideological structure and the common belief held by every resistance fighter. This great leader established an integrated philosophy through which the values, principles, and ideals of the path of resistance were embodied. As such, the Soleimani Fighting Academy became center stage, guiding and inspiring an entire generation of defenders of righteousness. Similar to those who contributed with martyr Imad Mughniyeh, martyr Samir al-Qantar, martyr Mustafa Badruddin, and others in generating victory, formulating the deterrence balance, and constructing a new era deserving of these great leaders.
To discuss this issue with us from California is Mr. Paul Larudi, former U.S. advisor in West Asia. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Paul, especially on this first anniversary of commemorating the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. We heard, everyone heard, Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei renewing his promise for revenge in response to the United States assassination of Haj Qasem Soleimani. That threat is definitely being taken seriously. It's being taken very seriously by the U.S., especially after the second mistake that they did by assassinating Iran's top nuclear physicist, Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. How do you think that this threat will affect the U.S. performance, maybe, in the region of West Asia?
Well, as you might imagine, the United States would not agree that it made any mistakes. And in the region, and it very deliberately assassinated General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. And I think that we have to accept that, in fact, even behind the scenes, they don't feel that they've made a mistake. What they've done is, from their point of view, is to strike a blow against Iran and to demonstrate that Iran is living dangerously, if you like. I mean, this is how they think of it. But nevertheless, they also realize that they are living under more threat than they have in the past. And we've seen the result of that, first of all, with the missile strikes on Ain al-Assad Air Base a year ago. And this is what the United States, as a result of that, consolidated its forces, brought in all the other areas in which they had their troops, and consolidated them in one area. So this is one consequence. And they're basically more cautious than they had been in the past. And
But if you'll allow me here, for several decades before even Marshal Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani thwarted and later defeated Daesh, he and the Al-Quds forces had done exemplary work in supporting the resistance allied forces stretching from Gaza to Beirut. This made Israel stand on its tiptoes for several years. Do you think that his martyrdom maybe released pressure off of the Israeli entity in the region, or is it the other way around?
Exactly. It is the other way around. Israel feels more pressure than it had in the past. And that's why it's using more remote operations. For example, its strikes in Syria generally take place either from so-called Israeli territory, or more typically from in the airspace above Lebanon. So it's being more cautious. The other thing is that they are using their what I would call U.S. and French proxies in to put pressure on Lebanon to try to diminish the effect, the influence, and the power of Hezbollah. That's obviously not going to work. But these are some of the remedies, and I personally, I think these are desperate measures on the part of Israel, and the United States, for that matter.
Well, after the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Haj Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the Deputy Director of the Popular Mobilization Units of Iraq, the Iraqi parliament passed a motion to expel U.S. forces and troops outside Iraq. There are two scenarios here. Either the U.S. abides by it and leaves, or it does not and withdraws to Iraqi Kurdistan region, solely recognizing its independence, just like they did with the Sahara, only the U.S. actually recognized the independence. However, won't the latter just maybe paint every American and maybe Kurd in Iraq with maybe a bullseye on his back?
Well, that's exactly why they won't do it.
So will they leave?
And their alternative is really just to dig in. Mm-hmm. But the keeping the U.S. forces based in Iraq, and I don't mean Iraqi Kurdistan, this is a trophy. Iraq is a trophy for the U.S. They won a war. They imposed their will upon Iraq. To back out of it is a defeat. And so I mean, it's possible that they will do it, but I think it's unlikely. They would do so very reluctantly.
Well, while the commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard said that there are as many as 13 scenarios that Iran is looking at for retaliation against the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, it seems that the response will be long drawn. It will not be to please the online commentators or those who expect some knee-jerk reactions. It will be a war of attrition. Iran will make sure that any action it takes inflicts more than just one damage against the main enemy in the region. Biden will soon take office, though. how do you think he will indulge the mistakes of Trump against the Islamic Republic of Iran? And what do you think are the options for him to try and at least hinder this war of attrition?
Well, I think the options for him to hinder the war of attrition is to create a bigger U.S. presence in the region, and he's not against that. He wants to increase U.S. military presence, for example, in Syria as well. So that all ties into it. They're neighbors, and the U.S. troops cross the border all the time. So, but in terms of, that's really his only option, but that's not a good option. That's not a good option because they've shown that they can't maintain that.
Well, that puts a lot of question marks as to what will the resistance be doing to these occupation troops. This is how the resistant factions in the region view the U.S. presence in the region. We will have to wait and see how the resistance will react to the presence of continuing presence of U.S. occupation, or maybe the increasing number of occupants in the region of West Asia. I want to thank you very much from California, Paul LaRudy, former U.S. advisor in West Asia. Thank you very much for being with us. Please stay tuned.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagian.
Islam is not about ethnicity. Islam has nothing to do with the color of your skin, with the language you speak. وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ اِخْتِلَافُ أَلْسِنَتِكُمْ وَأَلْوَانِكُمْ. One of the signs of Allah is the shades of colors that you as the children of Adam and Eve have, the different languages you speak. These are signs of Allah, not something for me to say, oh, listen to that language, ha 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 ha, or listen to this language, or this language is superior to that, or whatever. That's not the Quran. Creating boundaries between ourselves. He's this, she's this. Islam is about Islam. It transcends borders, races, ethnicities. The governance of Islam is important. If some believers have been able to establish it in part of the world, instead of us being happy, I wasn't part of it, and I personally wasn't, I wasn't even born. Unfortunately, I have not played any role in that. I should be happy that there are some that did that, and at least in my heart want to be with them, according to what Amir al-Mu'mineen said. You feel good about the deeds of a people, you are with them. If this is what they did, which is establishing the governance of Islam, I should like that, I should want that. Not, God forbid, forget about being neutral about this. Unfortunately, some are against it. The enemies of Islam are against it. Some Muslims are against it as well. Every turn, every time they get a chance, an opportunity, you see that coming out, words coming out, shaitan coming out of killing himself. Wallah, the Ahlul Bayt have said clearly, beyond a shadow of a doubt. All ulama throughout time have understood this. If anyone wants to suggest to you that this alim or the other alim, and I mean known figures in history, not some unknown figure you bring up that is really not known. And we, at least historically, don't have those types of people. Maybe in the recent years we have some unknown figures that are called Ayatollah or Maraja or whatever. From the likes of Shaykh al-Mufid, Qadi ibn al-Barraj, to Muhaqqiq Hilli, to Shaheed al-Awwal, all these are scholars from different regions. We have got to, Allah, we have got to establish the governance of Islam on earth in whatever area of it we can. In the way that the Ahlul Bayt say, just to make this very clear, because the enemies of Islam take this out of context. Unfortunately, some of our friends do the same. The method of establishing Islamic governance is people in any region maturing and the majority of them wanting it. Without that, it will not happen. That's why Amir al-Mu'mineen did not fight for it. Not that he didn't deserve governance, it was his. But the way to establish it is in this way, not the tactics that the West uses. The West is the one that creates coups in South America, in the Far East, as they call it, in the Middle East, in Africa. They're the ones that use these methods to overthrow governments, the most recent of which was the government in Egypt. After a revolution, a coup overthrew that revolution. As much as they tried to make it sound, it's otherwise. A coup overthrew it. Who supported them? The United States of America, the West, the Zionists, the Israelis. Revolution in Yemen, they want to make sure that they use their tactics, bring a government that they want. The Yemenis or in Lebanon, people voted for a government they wanted, the president of which is not willing to give in and to budge for what the Americans want. Independent, our thing. What do the Americans do? Create this false, these protests by paying people, creating economic hardship, and then paying people, bringing them to the street, making it seem like there's an uprising. No, this is not an uprising. Look at the figures. That's their methods. Our method is people need to be educated, they need to mature, they need to want it for it to happen. We need to move towards it. Then we need to protect it. We need to defend it. The way Fatima al-Zahra salawatullah wa salamu alayha did. For 40 years, this fitna has been around. Since the establishment of the Islamic government in the Islamic Republic of Iran, this fitna has been around throughout the globe. We've tried to separate the Islamic government from the Ummah, trying to suggest this is an Iranian thing, this is a Shia thing, this is that. Trying to delegitimize it. Who's doing that? Kuffar. It's a fitna. We have a choice, brothers and sisters. Our choice is to either see this and its extensions. And by that, I don't mean what the West calls about extensions. They make it an Iranian thing. They say, oh, the Iranians are interfering in Iraq. Well, what are you doing, United States of America in Iraq, stealing their oil? We believe in brotherhood and helping each other, not interfering. The extensions, the believers in Iraq that are brothers in Iran, the believers in Syria that are brothers with the believers in Iraq and in Iran, the believers in Lebanon who are brothers, the believers in Yemen, we're all brothers and sisters. The extensions of an Islamic movement, but we don't call it an Iranian government, Islamic government, the extensions of it. We have a choice. That we identify it as it is, an Islamic movement, and consider it and see it important enough that we are willing to sacrifice, as Abu Mahdi did, and as Hajj Qasim did, they sacrificed for the Islamic movement, for the establishment of Islam on earth, for the 12th Imam. This is what their martyrdom is about. We have a choice to see that and be willing to sacrifice and to support it, or to be like the people in Medina that saw the daughter of the Prophet is going behind the door, just watch that. We have a choice. This is the way I understand it, and I hope Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala helps all Muslimin worldwide understand this. The enemies of Islam have worked very hard.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars. In the name of Allah, assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program Ulama Speech. In today's program, we will listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
درسی که از امام عسکری به خصوص زمان امام عسکری این شبکه وکالت قوی ترین دوران بوده خیلی عجیبه ماها معمولا این ستا امام آخری رو
The lessons from Imam al-Askari alayhi salam and especially in the time of Imam Hasan al-Askari this network of representatives was the most powerful era It is really amazing We usually consider these last three imams alayhi salam the most oppressed imams, meaning Imam al-Jawad, Imam al-Hadi, and Imam al-Askari. We consider them to be the loneliest. And in reality, they were lonely. Their being under oppression and loneliness isn't enough to say that when you ask a Shia to speak 5 minutes about Imam al-Hadi, just 5 minutes, speak about Imam al-Hadi, They don't have anything to say. The reality is that we know very little. Do you know that in the era of these last three Imams, alayhi salam, especially Imam al-Askari, it was the most powerful era for Shias. It was an era where the Shia were the most widespread. As I humbly said, from the north of Africa to India. The Imams had created this network of representatives, especially in the era of Imam Hasan al-Askari, alayhi salam. They totally established it. This is the lesson we receive from Imam al-Askari, alayhi salam, that this network of representatives, which is the result of the Ahlul Bayt's work, we should not be cut off from it in the era of occultation of Imam al-Mahdi, alayhi salam. Thank you so much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
Patriotism and piety, courage and resistance. These are attributes associated with Qasem Soleimani at home. But even Americans and Israelis would, in describing how he was a thorn in their sides, find themselves complimenting him. He was assassinated by America in Iraq on January the 3rd, 2020. Soleimani has been called master of Iran's intrigue by Americans, and by a prominent Israeli, he has been described as a commander who knew how to exploit the secret infrastructure he had established in order to fight, win, and establish presence. The Israeli in question would be Tamir Pardo, a former head of Israel's Mossad intelligence service. Pardo is relating how the fight against ISIS or Daesh turned Major General Soleimani from a shadow figure into a major player in the geopolitics of the region. And there it is. The main reason behind Qasem Soleimani's overwhelming popularity at home and inspirational legacy across Iran's borders. His fight against the nightmare terror group Daesh or ISIS. This is not to say everyone liked him equally, but he was loved by fellow combatants and revered overboard as a soldier who evolved into so much more on the battlefield and at home as a person. For a closer look at the man on the anniversary of his assassination, stay with me, Leila Faramarzi, on Iran Today. Soleimani the man can be seen even in his image as a soldier. He is known to have prevented both praise by the combatants and also the formation of boss-subordinate relationships. In other words, he was an egalitarian while at the same time commanding and winning battles matched to the world's superpower. That is why I will begin with his military legacy and move on to the more personal. We visited Resalat paper for a chat with Mr. Ambar Louis on the life and legacy of Soleimani, who was martyred along with 9 others, including Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Muhandis was deputy commander of Hashd al-Shaabi, that's the Popular Mobilization Forces, PMF, of Iraq.
Who was it that destroyed ISIS in Syria and Iraq, which the Americans said would last 20 years in a short time? Well, it's a fact that the people of the world know, but they want to know who was the creator of this power and what his ideas were. And it's important that Qasem Soleimani is currently at the top of the world news.
Soleimani, a youngster with no more than a high school diploma, joined the front during the imposed Iraq-Iran War of the 1980s. He rose quickly in the ranks, and in 1998 he became the longest-serving head of Quds Force. Quds Force is the IRGC's extraterritorial operations arm. Being an IRGC commander was not cause for popularity. But his selfless courage on the battlefront and his tactical military mind applied to complex geostrategic situations in the field were.
He didn't need to study at military universities and colleges. He gained his experience in the field. He had been on the field for 40 years, fighting and gaining experience, and at the same time using his own mental faculties and the inspirations he received. And so you see in the television footage that a military general who has reached the rank of lieutenant general saying his prayers in ordinary clothes. You see how he draws the operational lines without even carrying a handgun. When you look at American troops and generals, they're armed to the teeth with the most cutting-edge weapons and military equipment. He was an ordinary soldier and did not need any decorations. His thoughts and beliefs were his decorations.
Iranian and Iranian-backed forces became major combatants against Daesh after that terror group took over roughly a third of Iraq in 2014. The conflict went on till 2017 and was a rare occasion that put Iran and the US together in their fight against Daesh. That is not to say it was an equal fight. Iran was fighting for the safety and stability of its neighborhood, West Asia or the Middle East. But the US was the entity that birthed or supported groups like Daesh and the Taliban, only to fight them partially to keep them in check and rearrange them for future use. Anyhow, 3 years disgraced by the dirt spewed by Daesh over the birthplace of prophets did see a collaboration of sorts even between sworn enemies. On a number of occasions, Americans were hitting Daesh targets from the air, while at the same time, General Soleimani was directing ground forces against them. That's the Quds Force and PMF on the ground. Soleimani was a natural-born leader, deducing from all one reads and hears. He was always in to fight for a cause and grouped people to go along with him. He was instrumental in preventing Iraq from completely falling to Daesh by fighting with his Quds force and Iranian-backed Iraqi militia forces and regular forces. Kurdish leaders have been cited that when Daesh took Mosul in 2014 and was about to head for Erbil, there was no American or Turkish support in sight for the Kurdish forces. But in just 2 hours, Soleimani arrived in Erbil with two large planes of military supplies. His presence alone was a battle shipment. He shored up the frontline Peshmerga soldiers to protect Erbil and Kirkuk from the Daesh onslaught. And protected they were. Mr. Sharif is a fellow general who knew Qasem Soleimani on the job. He has plenty to say on the person and his assignments.
Qasem Soleimani used the death of Jalal Talabani in such an appropriate way to create unity in the Kurdish society. His visits to such areas always carried an immense amount of risks. But as you know, he went there and offered his condolences to Talabani's family and even paid a visit to his grave. With this behavior, the emotional relationship and the diplomatic and political dialogue, he prevented great bloodshed in this region, and the Kurdish region remained as part of Iraq.
Also in the south of Iraq, where that country's forces had collapsed with Daesh at the gates in Baghdad and Najaf, Soleimani organized Shia militias with a fatwa from Ayatollah Sistani, and he conducted his command to the effect needed in pushing back Daesh, and pushed back Daesh was. Otherwise, America would have met with a very different scene in Iraq when in 2003 it invaded that country to oust its Ba'athist president Saddam Hussein. In ousting Saddam, America pushed Iran away from itself yet further as well.
In the southern part of Iraq, you can almost see the same situation. But when you look at it, on the Iraq issue, Saudi Arabia was one of the countries experiencing the worst failures. This is the result of Haj Qasem's strategy in employing and paying attention to all tribal sheikhs in Iraq, and not just Shias. When you look at his discourse, relations and behaviors, they have pervaded all Iraqi societies. Such behaviors ruled out a conflict with the Kurds in southern Iraq. Haj Qasem's behavior throughout his life has been a unifying factor.
With the 2003 invasion, Iran's allegations of U.S. meddling in other states' affairs were yet again justified. And as the United States sought to negotiate a deal for Iraq to allow American forces to stay in the country past the 2011 deadline, General Soleimani advised Iraqi officials to refuse to sign. His quiet charisma and pragmatism were winning traits in convincing parties and rallying their support. American officials even have been known to try to communicate with General Soleimani to ease tensions in Iraq.
You see, if you remember during the invasion of Iraq, the United States disarmed all Iraq's artillery and missiles, bought off all the military leaders of the Ba'ath Party, and then carried out its attacks. The policy of the United States and Europe in conquering governments and territories is to buy off and deceive their leaders in negotiations, either through offering bribes or issuing threats. He was the one who closed the door to dialogue with the United States, but that's not to say that he did it every instance. We have had interactions in Afghanistan and even in Iraq, but he had shut the door to negotiations with the intent to buy him off.
There's plenty been said on the matter and the man in different voices and media outlets. Let's take a look at some of those sources with Shahsa.
Hi, I'm Sharza Manteri, and we'll be reviewing the latest update on the anniversary of the cowardly assassination of Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis by the U.S. Qasem News Agency reports General Soleimani thwarted U.S. plot to change region's identity, Nouri al-Maliki says. The former Iraqi Prime Minister and current Secretary General of the Islamic Dawab Party said the U.S. decided to assassinate Soleimani because he thwarted many of its plots to change the identity of the region. Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis succeeded in stopping more than one scheme for changing the region, which bothered the Americans a lot. He added, Qasem Soleimani helped the people in fronts in Yemen, Syria, Lebanon, and Iraq to withstand and become strong in the face of the aggression, and perhaps his position in Syria is the most prominent, where he stopped the plot of its collapse, which was prepared by Israel and Arab countries. ABNA 24 claims massive rally planned in Baghdad on anniversary of martyrdom of General Soleimani al-Muhandis. A massive rally is planned to be held in the Iraqi capital of Baghdad on the first anniversary of the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Now, a year after the assassinations, various programs are planned to be held in Iraq to commemorate the martyrs. According to PMU official Abu Zia al-Saghir, the programs will be organized at the popular and official levels. They include memorial services in different cities, he noted, adding that a million-strong rally is also planned in Baghdad, in which the participants will call for the expulsion of U.S. troops from the Arab country. In an article by Tehran Times, we witness Iran bent on avenging Soleimani's assassination to prevent further U.S. terror attacks. Ali Shamkhani, Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, says Iran is determined to take tough revenge against the U.S. for the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani in order to prevent the continuation of their terrorist attacks. The Islamic Republic of Iran is determined to take tough revenge on the perpetrators of this historic crime, prevent the continuation of America's terrorist destabilizing acts, and force them to leave the region, Shamkhani said. Shamkhani said the U.S. exit from the region will pave the way for sustainable peace and security. He said the U.S. intensified its destabilizing moves in Western Asia, which reached its peak with assassination of General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and terrorist attack at Baghdad Airport. That's all for this segment.
Soleimani was no doubt a military genius. He managed to shatter Israel's image of invincibility. That happened during the 33-day War of Tammuz in 2006 between the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah and Israel on the other side. The war was part of George W. Bush's plan to destroy the resistance in Palestine and Lebanon and topple the government in Syria after having invaded Afghanistan and Iraq. It was all part of a broader plan intended to finally isolate and encircle Iran. Who went to Beirut in the early days of the Israeli attack on Lebanon was Qasem Soleimani. He did so to organize the resistance forces and coordinate combat operations.
Hello.
Now the world strategists are assessing who was he who prevented Syria's Bashar al-Assad from being toppled, even when the whole world had gathered to do so. More importantly, they want to know who was he who somehow participated in commanding and managing the wars in Lebanon and Gaza. While Israel defeated the armies of four or five Arab countries in 1967, how did he manage to come out as the victor in subsequent wars against the regime to the point that Israel is now besieged by Lebanon and Gaza? Who was it that changed Lebanon's Hezbollah position from being a deterrent to a group that takes preventive action?
Thanks to Soleimani and the troops he commanded or joined forces with, Daesh was defeated in, yes, Iraq and most parts of Syria. A less popular fight worldwide, however, was that in support of the Syrian government. But it has been successful all the same. Mr. Kanani Mogaddam is a veteran of the revolution with experience on all fronts. Always worth an interview.
From the very beginning, General Soleimani identified and strengthened the cause of resistance in our region. He separated the real resistance from mercenaries, connected them and turned them into rings of resistance. He then intertwined these rings to form a chain of resistance that stretched from the Mediterranean Sea to East Asia, from Afghanistan, Yemen, Lebanon, to Pakistan.